there are problems of learning on Tisha B'Av in general, of anything and everything. That doesn't mean that you're not allowed to learn Torah. If you weren't able to learn Torah today, then you would not have said Birchas HaTorah in the morning. You did say it because there are passages of Torah that can be learned. But in the choice that is normally given for those passages of Torah, those sections and selections of Torah that you do spend your time on Tisha B'Av, the fact of the matter is that the piece that I have chosen from Gemara Tanis is not there. That doesn't mean that what we're doing is improper. There will be, however, certain portions that I will skip to indicate that you're not supposed to intensify your learning of Torah to the extent of understanding fully those things which we call Devarim Haro'im, the passages that conjure up all kinds of horrors of the past, are most always Agadata. This is not Agoda. This happens to be Halacha. But it is entirely within the realm of the Halacha of Tisha B'Av and Avelus that you are allowed to learn about Avelus. And this portion in the Gemara, beginning with page 5, in Gemara Tanis, is what happened on Tisha B'Av and before that on Shivoso B'Tammuz. So that in my skipping, there is reason for my skipping as I do it. I'll try to stay constantly within the realm of the strictures of learning on Tisha B'Av. Now, if you want to see it, if you want to see anything in English, by the way, so you have the same on page 11. Yeah, Mike.
I don't know if you want questions, but during the Sefira study, you mentioned how strange it was that marriage should be prohibited during Sefira, when the whole part of Sefira was the decimation of the Jews, and here we're prohibiting marriage. To prohibit Torah study on a day when we're memorializing our lack of following the Torah seems to be also contradictory. I mean, we did a good job. Well, we beat up our friends, Sina, did all right. Sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Yet now we're saying, let's memorialize it by continuing this behavior. We don't say hello to our Jews,
if your premise is correct, then we would have to leave out Birchas HaTorah. You cannot use the word prohibit learning of Torah. You are limited in the learning of Torah. It is a focus that I want to give to you. I want you to focus on Dvarim Haro'im, the very reason that you are sitting and having to go through this experience on Tisha B'Av. So that's the issue. Let's begin on page 5. Hey Devarim, Chamisha Devarim, there were 5 things, Eru Es Avosenu B'Shivoso B'Tammuz, that occurred historically on Shivoso B'Tammuz. And the Gemara goes ahead and tries to tell you which they are. Number 1, Nishtabru Aluchos. When Moshe Rabbeinu came down for the first time from Har Sinai, the stone tablets, the Aseres Hadibros, were smashed. Asks the Gemara, Minolon, how do you know that happened on Tisha B'Av? The Tanya, because we learned in a brisa telling us that b'shisha b'chodesh nitnu aseres hadibros liYisrael. It was on the 6th of Sivan that the aseres hadibros were given to Bnei Yisrael. That was the original Shavuos. But the brisa continues and says Rabbi Yossi on there. Rabbi Yossi disagrees and says v'shiva bo on the 7th is when he received the Torah. So there is a machlokas in this brisa about what the true date of Kabbalah Satorah is, of when we should celebrate Shavuos, whether on the 6th or on the 7th.
No.
Why not?
No, you're confusing two other days. Kabbalah Satorah is
the first day, not when we celebrate. It's always 15 days after Pesach.
Should wait a minute. I hear what you say.
But Shavuos and Kabbalah Satorah are two different things.
Okay,
Shavuos
huh?
Has to do with agriculture, and Kabbalah Satorah is Kabbalah Satorah.
All right, so I'll say it differently.
This is about to win the first
I'll say it your way, okay? Is the first Shavuos on the 50th day or after 50 days?
Was the year fuller for a chaser? That's what the Gemara focuses, the year for a chaser. Okay, good.
Nonetheless, that's the machlokes, that the original Shavuos may have been on one day or the next. Ask the Gemara, Manda Amar B'Shisha Niknu, according to the one who says that it was given on the 6th of Sivan, then what happened was that B'Shisha Niknu, U'B'Shiva Olam Moshe, it was on the 6th day when HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed himself. But on the 7th day of Sivan is when Moshe went ahead and went up to get the Torah. Manda Amar B'Shiva, Rabbi Yossi, who maintained that the Luchos were given to Moshe on the 7th day, he says that it was on the 7th day of Sivan B'Shiva Nitanu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed himself, U'B'Shiva, and that very same day is Olam Moshe, and Moshe went up to Har Sinai. D'chasiv, we can prove this from the Psukim, Vayikra'el Moshe Bayom HaShavi'i, on the 7th day, the 7th day of Sivan, U'Kisiv, and thereafter it says, Vayavo Moshe B'Soche Onam, Moshe went into the depths of the cloud, Vayal El Hohor, going up to the mountain, Vayhi Moshe B'Hor, Aboim Yom V'Aboim Laila, Moshe remaining there for 40 days and 40 nights. If you count as Shrim V'Abo of the Sivan, if you take 24 days that are left in Sivan, Yeshitza of the Tammuz, and 16 days, the first 16 days of Tammuz, then you will see Milo Laho Aboim, the 40th, is completed on what day? The Shitzal of the Tammuz, on the 17th of Tammuz. And it was then that Moshe Rabbeinu Noches came down from the mountain. Asa, and upon arriving, Tavrinehu Laluchos, he went ahead and smashed the Luchos. Yichsid, as is written, Vayhi Kasher Korav El HaMachaneh, it wasn't up on the top of the mountain, but when he came close to the, at the bottom of the mountain, when he came close to the machane, to the encampment, Ayar es ha'egel, seeing the egel azor, Ayashlech mi'adov, he goes ahead and throws it out of his hands, es haluchos, we're talking about the luchos, Ayushaber osam, breaking the stone, tachas ahor, at the bottom of the mountain, at the foot of the mountain. The first of five things that happens on Asura B'Tavis, on the Shivosa B'Tavis, excuse me.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, just talk up so we can have record.
Why is that a tragedy? It's the thing that caused him to do that is a tragedy. The breaking of Luchos, we don't worship Luchos.
Fine, but the tragedy itself is symbolized in the breaking of the Luchos. There's no question about it that you're correct. There's no question about it. But to have to have gone ahead and broken that which was Mikvahaluchos, Mikhtav Elokim Heimah, the handiwork of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, sui generis. At that moment when he did it, he never thought that there would be a second one. Because nonetheless, we talk about the symbol and not the reasons. But obviously, the one who understands has got to look at the reasons behind it. The second thing that happens on Shivosa B'Tamuz, line 15, is Batel HaTamid. When we are preparing 3 weeks before and Yerushalayim is entirely under siege, then obviously there was no way to have the ability to maintain the korbanos, the avodas beis hamikdash, in a normal way. And korban atomi des hakeves achel taseh baboker, the morning korban des hakeves hasheni taseh ben ha'abayim, the second, the mincha korban, could no longer be brought. From a practical point of view, you could say, well, obviously, if you're in the midst of a war over there, they may have run out of sheep. Also, from a practical point of view, you could say, that realizing that the famine and the enemy was closing in, and destruction was only imminent, didn't know when, but it was imminent, that Sidrei HaChayim, your normal way of living, had been completely disrupted. And the Gemara says, how do we know? And the answer is Gemara. The word Gemara, if you see in Rashi, Gemara means, the Rashi is to the left of line 14, Gemara, Kach kibalnu me'avasim. It's a long-standing, time-honored tradition that we have from generation to generation, that came Shivoso of the Tammuz, everything stopped in the Beis Hamikdash.
Rabbi, it's ironic that prior to that date, there was such a chaos politically. We probably don't conceive it. We can't even comprehend how chaotic it was.
In the second Beis Hamikdash.
In the second Beis Hamikdash. But one thing, they still went down, it's with the Talmid. The Kohanim went down with the Christians. Isn't that what another one, Otto Ish, was complaining about? While the whole country is in chaos and the Beis Hamikdash is going on business as usual?
It's religion as usual, not business as usual.
That's right.
Right. Business as usual wasn't business as usual, but it was religion as usual. It's probably that's Cholyech v'Shivreich, that's the Makkah, that you can go on chuckling when the whole world is burning, instead of doing something. But that's when you're convinced, you know how it happens, when you are convinced that you are right, and no one else can be right, and I know that I am right, and you surely can't be right. That's when it's business as usual. Then the Kenzach Hofshan Kedusha, and the Kenzach Shoklin, and Eshin Tzong, and Kishkin, you know, make Kiddush and everything else. That's until the crisis occurs. Stock crisis occurs. The third thing, line 15, Hukta Ha'ir. The walls of the city of Yerushalayim were broken into. In other words, the enemy was able to break through the walls. B'yud Zayin Hava? Asks the Gemara, on the 17th of Tammuz is when it happened? If you take a look at Psukim in two places, you'll find that it's different. In Yumiyahu it says, V'hoksiv ha'chodesh ha'ravi'i, the fourth month of the year, which is Tammuz, B'sishol ha'chodesh, on the ninth day of Tammuz, not the 17th, V'yechezakara of Ba'ir, the famine was just overpowering. Uksiv basrei, and then shortly thereafter, in the same parak of Yerushalayim, it says Vatibokahir, and then it was broken through. So, if you look at Yirmiyahu, which is an account of what was going on at the first Churban, we shouldn't celebrate Shivoso v'Tammuz at least on account of this, of the walls being breached in the first Beis Hamikdash. We should celebrate it on the 9th. Not on the 17th. Omar Rava comes to answer, Lo Kasha, there is no contradiction between what the Mishnah says and what the Pasuk just was quoted as. Kan Barishana v'Kan Bashniya. You are talking about a statement in the first Beis Hamikdash, which true was the way Yirmiyahu said it, on the 9th of Tammuz. But Kan Bashniya, when the Braisa was talking, in this case when the Mishnah was talking, we're quoting from a Mishnah here, which I haven't reprinted. And the Mishnah was talking, it was talking about the day that the walls were breached in the second Beis Hamikdash, Tanya, because there is a very brisa that explains this. Barishona hukpa'ohair b'sishah b'tammuz. In the first Beis Hamikdash, it is true that on the 9th of Tammuz is when the walls were breached. But bashniyah, in the second one, b'shivoso b'tammuz. But in the second Beis Hamikdash, the walls were broken down, and Yerushalayim was fully invaded by the enemy, the Roman legions, on the 17th. And we are talking about the second Beis Hamikdash. Now you say to me, why don't we go ahead and establish the 9th of Tammuz as a fast day? And I say to you, Tafasta merubo lo tafasta. You've gone overboard. There is nothing wrong with being able to join a lesser tragedy and postponing its memorialization to a day when there is a greater tragedy, and this was it. The first Beis Hamikdash surely was tragic, but there is the feeling that the loss of the second Beis Hamikdash was far more tragic. Now, if you disagree with that, why don't you just look at the effects of the first Beis Hamikdash and its destruction, and the effects of the second Beis Hamikdash? The first Beis Hamikdash, after 70 years, we were able to reconstruct. And the second Beis Hamikdash, it's 100 times worse, because it's more than 2,000, it's going on 2,000 years, 1,917 years.
Was there a plan after the first Beis Hamikdash on the 9th that was Mabato after the Malay Shani?
Yeah. This is a very fundamental question. After the first Beis Hamikdash, what did they then do with the ninth of Tevis? With the ninth of Tammuz. In Bavel, there is no question that they observed. I mean, we have no sources for it, but it has to be that the ninth of Tammuz was always a Yom Tzara. The minute the Yom Tzara was over was when the second Beis Hamikdash was built. How do I know? Because the second Beis Hamikdash says that we are recalling these four fast days. That's what we call Ta'anis in Kabbalah. This is Rambam calls it Ta'anis Leviyim. And the Leviyim established these four fast days as memorials. They promised that Tisha B'Av and Asara B'Tevis and Shivasa B'Tammuz and Tzom Gedalia will yet be Yom Tov. And that's why we didn't say Tachnun this morning. After Slichas, what do? You say Tachnun, correct? Today, you don't say Tachnun. And what are Kinnis any different than Slichas? It's the same, basically the same thing. Why? Because today is going to be a Merl. Today is going to be a Yom Tov.
Then why do we say Tachnun and Slichas?
Oh, because of a technical problem. The technical construct of Slichas is that it is patterned after a Tefillah Shachris, after davening. You don't start Shachris until and unless you say Shiru Shvacha, praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's Ashrei in Slichas. Okay? The same Ashrei, that's in Pesukei Dezimra. You're following, after Pesukei Dezimra. Pesukei Dezimra is nothing more than a hakdama, a mind-setting, mood-changing passage for tefillah, for davening, standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's the Shmoneh Esrei. The equivalent of the Shmoneh Esrei is the Yud Gimel Midos.
That's
Slichas. Wait a minute. After that, after Shmoneh Esrei, you say Tachnun, correct? A normal Wednesday, you're going to say Tachnun. A normal Thursday, you're going to say Tachnun. Whenever you say Slichas, you say Tachnun. Why? Because of that technical construct. Now, I made it clear that in Kinos there is no inner structure of the Kinos. It is nothing more than an anthology. And if I say Faturi, it's the correct word. It's schlepped from all over. But don't think of it. That is not to denigrate the Kinos in any which way. You can put into Kinos anything you want. You can take out of Kinos anything you want. We don't stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu today with structure. Everything is out of sync, out of whack. However, at the same time, with being so discombobulated, with such a dysfunction, so samt filosi, we daven HaKadosh Baruch Hu on this day has not listened. Historically has not listened. With all this, you're not going to stay that way very long. You're going to get up, and you're going to stand, and you're going to start reading Psukim of Nechama. Once you're already a Psukim of Nechama of consolation, remember that part of this Nechama is that the Novi predicted that today is going to be a Yom Tov. And we're waiting for it. Okay? So that's the structure of whatever structure I can give to Kinos. You know what Sephardim do? The Sephardic women do after Chatzos? They wash the floors. Because Mashiach is coming today. The tradition that Mashiach is being born is the same tradition. This is a Yom Tov, and out of the disarray and the dysfunction of Tisha B'Av, we're going to dance in the streets. Mashiach is liable to come. You should see my dirty floor. I'd rather be caught dead than my dirty floor. That's what Sephardim do. No two ways about it. One more thing. Technically, the second Beis Hamikdash burnt until the 10th on Tisha B'Av. Okay? Mm-hmm. Tomorrow, the devastation is still going on. And the fire started this afternoon. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, sorry. It's going to burn, but after Mincha, you put on the parochas. Before Mincha, because of this obsession that we have. Out of the ashes of devastation, there will always come growth and regeneration.
Related question, if we move Tisha B'Tammuz to Sheva Esar B'Tammuz because of the second base of Mikdash. Okay. Or we don't celebrate Tisha B'Tammuz because we celebrate Sheva Esar B'Tammuz. Why didn't we do the same thing with Tisha B'Av to Yud Av? Is more the second base of Mikdash, Yud Av is a more appropriate day to celebrate.
Actually, Yud.
Yud Av.
Oh, Yud Av. I'm sorry. I was hearing Yud Aleph. Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
The more appropriate data.
If you wait a couple of, if you wait a couple of pages, and I'm not going to complete all the pages, but that I'll get to. Rabbi Yochanan said that if he lived in those days, he would have made Tisha B'Av on the 10th of Av, without question. Now, openly, the open frustration of Rabbi Yochanan. Your problem, Lauren, is that he preceded you by 1600 years.
Yeah, okay.
So that's all. So the feeling was real.
Unrelated question.
And the Gemara does deal with it and answers it.
Unrelated question. Is there any chance that Rabbi Akiva was encouraged somewhat in favor of Bar Kokhba because it was almost 70 years since the Korban and he was looking for remnants to the first Korban?
Unquestionably correct. Unquestionable.
Well, if it was 30 years, he didn't have the same attitude.
No. You're right. You're right also.
You're right.
Yeah? You're right also. Okay? All right? Now, he felt that we have no proof. We don't have a Rabbi Akiva directly. But we do have a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, to whom we ascribe everything that's in the Zohar, or pretty much everything that's in the Zohar. Okay? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai.
Rabbi
Shimon bar Yochai. Okay? Look in his Zohar, and you hear strains of parallels. And the Churban of Rabbi Akiva is that what he tried to do didn't come true. That's why the second Churban is far greater than the first Churban. What Ezra and Nehemiah did accomplish, Rabbi Akiva and Bar Kokhba and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai in this case could not accomplish. They could not. They gave a survival. No two ways about it. But it's sound thinking. Now your job is to go find strains of Makoros in all the Midrashim and all the Chazal of those days and all of the works of Tanoim to prove that indeed it is correct. But for anyone who has, all right, we've been dwelling on this period now, I've been hacking you at China for a year now, I haven't let you go. You feel it instinctively that 65 years thereafter, the 70 is coming. There is no Nevuah over it, but a Chacham has to understand and take lessons. You must go ahead and realize that it's time already. Let's go back to the Gemara. Line 21. Sarap Apustimus es HaTorah. We don't know who this Apustimus is. He has a Greek-Roman sounding name. I cannot tell you exactly when it happened, but it is obvious that this Shivasa B'Tammuz incident, where this Apustimus in defiance went ahead and burnt the Torah, made such a deep impression on the psyche of the generation and the following generations in which it happened, that the Gemara says, Gemara, kach kibalnu mi'avoseinu. This is what we have. I don't know that we have any reliable information as to what happened, but you can be sure that it turned out to be a national tragedy. Then the fifth thing that happened is he mitzelem beheichol. This is a problem. Literally, let me tell you what the three words mean. Hemitzelem, that an idol was erected b'heichol in the Beis Hamikdash. Now, when was this? Did Apustimus do it? It would seem as if hemitzelem b'heichol, he erected an idol. Now, the only he, the antecedent of he, is Apustimus. It would seem that way. It is not clear that is the case. So, therefore, there is a second reading that not he mitzelem beheichol, but there is an alternate reading of Hu Amad Tselem Behechol. On that day, in a certain period of time, the Beis HaMikdash had all of a sudden an idol there. And some even go and say that it was in the times of the first Beis HaMikdash, and Menashe was the one who erected it. So we really don't know. I want to skip, because the psukim in which we talk here about that selim, about that idol, just somehow would need a little too much mental agility on our part. And let's just skip it. Let's come to Tisha B'Av. Next page, page 6, line 26. The Tisha B'Av, continuing to quote the Mishnah, which was many pages before, on Tisha B'Av, the Gezerah, the edict, occurred that the Dor in the Midbar, the generation in the Midbar, heard that they would not come to the land. In other words, those who came out of Mitzrayim. Minolam, and again here, I'm going to skip a whole bunch of psukim. How do we know? And the next line, the next whole bunch of lines, tries to go ahead and tell you from the psukim that are being quoted in Bamidbar, from Bamidbar, Baloscha, Noso, Shlach, all these psukim, to indicate how we learn that on Tisha B'Av, and that is the first Tisha B'Av, not with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, how we learn that indeed the first Tisha B'Av occurred in the Midbar. Now go to line 40. See, after proving, starting from Iyar of that year, Nisan, and then Iyar, Sivan, all the things that happened on line 40, Uksiv, Chumash and Bamidbar tells us, Shlach Lecha Anashim. Moshe Rabbeinu was told in Parsha Shlach, send Anashim, send people to scout the land, you send people. The Tanya and the Brisa tells us that when the Meraglim left, when Parsha Shlach was said, Shlach Lecha Anashim, that was Be'esrim V'tisha B'Sivan. It was on the 29th day of Sivan of that year, 2449. Shlach Lecha Anashim. Alright? Be'esrim V'tisha B'Sivan is Shalach Moshe Meraglim. Uchasiv. And further on in the parasha it says, Vayashuvu Mitur Aretz Miketz Abayim Yom, that the Meraglim came back 40 days after they had left to scout out the land. Hane Abayim Yom, these 40 days, Nechichad, a minus 1 to Tisha B'Av. If you will count, you will see that you're minus 1. So Omar Rava, you can understand it in the following way. I'm sorry, Omar Abaye, I read Rava. Omar Abaye said, Tammuz dahahi shato, the month of Tammuz in that year, miluyo, was a full month of 30 days. So you have the entire month of Tammuz, and then what's left over, and you see you come to 40 days, smack on Tisha B'Av. Tichsiv, we have a remez, says Abaye, from the Pasuk in Echa, where Yirmiyahu says that year, Kara Olai Mo'ed Lishbor Bachuroi. Kara means to announce, Kara Olai. You announced in my presence a Mo'ed, Mo'ed meaning Rosh Chodesh. You gave me a full Rosh Chodesh of 2 days, Lishbor Bachuroi, in order that on the 9th of Av, you can break that generation. See? Back to Bamidbar, the entire community, the Dor HaMidbar, went ahead. They started to cry when they heard the edict that they would not reach Eretz Yisrael. Balayla Hahu, that night. Now that night is important. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, said, also Hayom, the day that the Meraglim came back was Erev Tisha B'Av. was yesterday, Erev Tisha B'Av. And this is something that you have to memorize. Kadosh Baruch Hu said to the Meraglim and to Bnei Yisrael, you cried needlessly. And the Meraglim told you what they did. You started to cry, Gaval, what a mistake we made leaving Mitzrayim. Va'ani, and says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I promise you, ani kovei alachem b'chiyah ledoros. And as a result of that day, I will establish a day when you'll cry for generations on end. Now, there is a problem over there. Osa hayom erev Tisha B'Av hayom. Right? The Gezerah came on what day? On Ches Tisha B'Av. So, why don't we observe Tisha B'Av on when? On Ches, not the night. So if you take a look in the left-hand margin over there, in the microscopic reading, you will see that the publisher of the Gemara on that line puts the words Osa Hayom Erev Tisha B'Av, puts those three words in parentheses with a star, with an asterisk, asking you, at least in this edition, to go to the left. Sadi Lamed Sarich Liyo, so Sarich Lamar Osa Laila, that night Leil Tisha B'Av Hayom.
So that's
so it's already the ninth. In other words, they came back on the 8th. That's when the Meraglim came back, 40 days later. And when they started to give their report and Bnei Yisrael started to react adversely, it was already the night time. You could not go to sleep. The hustle and the bustle in the camp just kept everyone up till all hours. It was Leil Tisha B'Av. It was already last night. And that's what he says, V'chein Yisrael B'ayim Yud, B'ayim Yaakov. And if you take a look at the version of this piece of Gemara as quoted in the Ein Yaakov, that's the way the Ein Yaakov reads it. So there is an alternate version over there which allows us to establish the integrity of the day of Tisha B'Av as being the ninth and none other. And probably the most important part of this Gemara from here on in, whatever we're going to learn about Tisha B'Av, is that you understand this. From that first time, that Tisha B'Av of the Meraglim, the day has proven to have some kind of unexplainable quality, an inherent quality for disaster for Bnei Israel. And that's the point of the Gemara. There is no way of explaining it other than empirical knowledge. And Rabbi Soloveitchik in this article that I reprint of his later on in the booklet, The Singularity of Eretz Yisrael, tries to, in my opinion, offer some kind of rationale for what is going on. Alright, on page 30, that's where I've reprinted it, with the kind permission of the one Rabbi Bezdin, who published the summary of this talk. The Rabbi Soloveitchik tries to connect the entire Churban with not recognizing the singularity of Eretz Yisrael. And he translates singularity, he claims the word for singularity is segula. Yisem li segula mikol ha'amim. You will be different, you'll be a treasured jewel. There is no other one like you. And the segula relationship, says the Rav, about Eretz Yisrael, is one that if you fight and you don't accept, is going to traditionally create a Tisha B'Av. And every single time, the Meraglim felt that it was more important that they have their power base and go back to Mitzrayim, rather than push on to be able to maintain the segula relationship with Eretz Yisrael, the destruction of the first base HaMikdash, rather than maintaining the segula relationship, that is to ensure the segula relationship. They went and were influenced by all foreign powers and ways around them. The second base HaMikdash was the same. Beitar and so on down the line. Every time the segula relationship is somehow forced to a brink of disaster. And indeed it is a disaster. But it is a day with a propensity for national tragedy. Line 48. Chorav Abayis Barishona. The first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. How do I know that the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? Take a look at Psukim and Navi. Dichasiv, because it is written in Melachim Beis. Ubachodesh HaChamishi, the fifth month, which is Av. B'shiv'a l'chodesh, on the seventh day of the month. Hishnas Chasrei l'melech Nebuchadnezzar, melech Babel. In the 19th year that Nebuchadnezzar was reigning in Babel. Bo Nebuzaradan, came Nebuzaradan, Rav HaTabachim, Eved Melech Babel, the Eisenhower, right? The pattern of Babel came, his name was Nebuzaradan, and what did he do? He came, Eved Melech Babel, Yerushalayim, Vayisrof is Beis Hashem. What date is given in that pasuk? The 7th. That's in Malachim. Then you look at Yirmiyahu, Uchesiv, the second pasuk, says as follows. Tachodesh HaChamishi, in the 5th month, which is Av, Be'osar Lachodesh, in the 10th of the month, Hishnas Chasrei Lemelech Nebuchadnezzar, Melech Bavel, Bo Nebuzaradan, Rav Tabachim, Amad Lifnei Melech Bavel B'Yerushalayim. The same pasuk is restated, but with a different day. Instead of the 7th, Nebuzaradan arriving in Yerushalayim, it is the 10th. V'tanya, and obviously when you have two psukim, one from Malachim and one from Yirmiyahu, contradicting themselves, you have to have an explanation. Comes a brisa to explain. Tanoim were befuddled by these two psukim. Eifshar lomar shebishiva, it's impossible to say that the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Yerushalayim for the first time was destroyed on the 7th. Sharei kvar ne'amar, because we have a second pasuk that says be'asar, it was on the 10th. The eifshar lomar be'asar, it's impossible to say that it was destroyed on the 10th. Sharei kvar ne'amar, because the first pasuk says b'shiva. Okay, Tzad, how do we get out of this dilemma? Answers the Ibraisa, b'shiva'a nifnesu nicharim le'achal. You've got to understand that the two psukim don't contradict one another, but speak about two different phases of the destruction. The pasuk that says that it was on the 7th that Nebuzaradan was able to get in to breach the walls and come to the Heichal, come to the Beis HaMikdash on the 7th. You've got to understand that on the 7th he came in and plundering the place, v'achlu v'kilkilu bo, he plundered the Beis HaMikdash, eating and destroying whatever there was, shvi'i on the 7th, and shmini on the 8th, u'tishi'i on the 9th of Tisha B'av, and Samuch Lachashecha, at the end of Tisha B'Av, after 3 days of plundering the Beis HaMikdash, that's when Hitzisobo Esa'or, he went ahead and decided to burn everything after he plundered it all. He burned it down at the end of the day of Tisha B'Av, v'hayadolek v'holeich kol hayom kulo, and it burned the entire day the next day. Okay.
Even the first one was burned on the day.
Alright. Shenemar, as it is said, Oy Lonu, tragic is it for us, Ki fana hayom, that the day has passed, Ki yinatu tzilile erev, that already we see the clouds of the evening, and what? And it's still burning. And it's burning. Hainu da'amar Rabbi Yochanan, it is for this reason that Rabbi Yochanan said, as you say, Lord, Il malei ha'yisi v'yosoh hador, oh, if I only was there in that generation, lo kiva'ativ ela ba'asiri. Because of this, I would have insisted, notwithstanding the Tisha B'Av of the Meraglim, I would have insisted that we celebrate Tisha B'Av when? On the 10th of Av. Now, you know what's being implied here. That maybe we should do how many days of Tisha B'Av? Do 2 days of Tisha B'Av. Now you begin to understand that indeed tomorrow is a semi-Tisha B'Av. The restrictions aren't lifted entirely except for Achila Shasiya. So here, you know, you can't do the impossible. To impose 2 days of Tisha B'Av back to back is an impossibility. Only the most unbelievable Hasidim want to make Yom Kippur like 2 days. Yud and Yud Aleph. Why? Because we make every other Yom Kippur 2 days. But you don't go and impose it on anyone. So you try a minimal kind of imposition. Comes Erev Shabbos already, and that clobbers. That not only clobbers the Avelos, but if it's Erev Shabbos and Tisha B'Av, what do we do? Technically, if Erev Shabbos were to be Tisha B'Av, what do? We postpone it till after Shabbos. Tisha B'Av itself, not post Tisha B'Av. If Tisha B'Av itself can be bumped by Shabbos, then the residue of after Tisha B'Av onto the 10th of Tisha B'Av surely can be bumped earlier because of Shabbos. So the problem exists forever, other than to say that, as you will see, that there really is not no slovenly planning over here. It depends what you consider the greater tragedy. Is it the beginning or is it the end? Which is more devastating? That you saw Nebuzaradan and his henchmen eating, singing, dancing, plundering, and surely knowing the mentality of the ancients, especially at war, urinating and defecating all over the Mizbeach. Even, I have no proof of that, other than I know how ancients acted from other places. See, I can't pin it on him. But when soldiers plunder in anger, they plunder, they do anything, they do the most bizarre things in the world to be able to break the spirit of the vanquished, and so that the victor can achieve a greater breaking of spirit. Surely they did that. But can you imagine what would have been if you were a Kohen or a Levi or a Yisrael having to watch that? Or is it the Sreifa, is it the burning that is more tragic? Each one conjures up in his and her mind what symbols he and she prefers. What is more tragic to you may be less of a tragedy to me. So we stick it in, we push it to what do you call it? To the 9th of Av, despite the fact that things happened already on the 10th. Just reread that Rabbi Yochanan. Line 58. Rabbi Yochanan, Il Malei HaYisi Biel Sa'ador, if I lived in that generation, Lo Kvativ, I would not have established Tisha B'Av Ela Ba'asiri, unless it would have been on the 10th. Mipnei Sherubo Shel Heichol Bo Nisraf, because I look at the problem with the burning of the Heichol. You know, they could have plundered, but Gamzei Avor. Like in the times of the Chashmonaim, we get them out, we'll fight, we'll resist, we'll get them out, and we'll purify the Beis HaMikdash once again, and rededicate it, and make a Chanukah HaMizbeach, and finish. Burning is a total destruction. That means you have to rebuild. So, Rabbanon, however, the others maintain that we observe the first Beis HaMikdash destruction and memorialize it on Tisha B'Av, is because not of the burning. Aschalto de Puranusa Adifa. You take the start of the tragedy, and that's where you start from, because the burning was inevitable. You cannot begin to imagine that Bavel would have gone ahead and taken and plundered the Beis HaMikdash for 3 days and not burnt it. They had to go ahead and do it.
What part? The Beis HaMikdash was made out of stone.
No. But there was wood, there were other things that were wood.
What was burning?
What? To pour? There was wood. There was wood. And to scorch, the stones. The stones were as black as charcoal. Ubashnia, line 59. The second Beis HaMikdash, Minolon. How do we know? Ditanya, because again, a Braisa tells us. Megalgalim zechus liom zakai. And this is a very important principle. On days that have merit, somehow good things will always happen there. Megalgalim, you roll zechus, you roll good things, liyom zakai, into good days. Vechova, and bad things onto bad days. Okay? Amru, it was said, Kishachara Beis HaMikdash for Rishona, when the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Oso Hayom Erev Tisha B'Av. It was Erev Tisha B'Av, Hayah. Umotzei Shabbos Hayah. It was a Motzei Shabbos. Tisha B'Av was on Sunday. Umotzei Shavuos. It was the end of Shemitah, I saw. And remember that the Kohanim used to split up into administrative shifts. The administrative shift was the one of Yehoyarib. The Halevim, and at that time, Levim Hoyu Omrim Shira, they were singing. Vomdim al Duchanam, standing in their place where the choir had to be. So ask the Braiso, Mashira Hoyu Omrim, what were they saying? The Shira that they were singing was Tehillim Tzadi Dalu. Yoshev Alehem Esonom, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give them back for their sins, Ubera Osom, and through their evil Yatsmi saying he will destroy that. That's the end of the pasuk. Says the Brice of Elohi Spiku Lamar Yatsmi Seim Hashem Elokeinu. They didn't get to the words of may God, our God, destroy them, Ad Shebo'u Nochrimu Kivoshum, until Bnei Yisrael were captured, the Levium was silenced, V'chein Bishniyah, and the same thing happened in the second Beis Hamikdash. A day with a propensity for evil. Let's continue. Line 65. Nilkida Betar. Betar was destroyed. Betar was the final stronghold, and we'll see it in the Rambam when we learn the Rambam, one of the final strongholds of the Bar Kokhba revolution. The reason that it became such a miserable tragedy is because it signaled the end of that revolution and the complete decimation of all Israeli independence. What?
That happened on Tisha B'Av.
Nilkida Betar.
That's unthinkable.
Okay? How do I know?
It's many years later, though.
What do you mean? 65 years later?
Yeah.
135, right. Nilkida Betar is Gemara. We have a long-standing tradition that Betar, which was a stronghold second to none, was invaded on Tisha B'Av. Nechrisha Ha'ir. Next thing that happened on Tisha B'Av, that's the fifth, is that the city was plowed. Now, the city was plowed, if you just look, we're talking about obviously which city. It's difficult to know. Maybe Yerushalayim, it may be Betar, I don't know. But again, we have a girsa, we have a version that has to be understood. Nechrisha Ha'ir, Nami Gemara. It's also a long-standing tradition. You've got to understand, as we've spoken in the past many times, when you destroy something, and then you go ahead after the destruction of a piece of real estate on a property, a building or whatever, you go and plow underneath what it meant. And in, as I understand it, in ancient Roman law, whenever you wanted to indicate legally that this piece of territory is never to be rebuilt, you would go ahead and plow it. By plowing it, you indicate that the ground is not worthy of maintaining any kind of structure on it. Now, what was rebuilt? What was plowed? Was it Betar? Was it Yerushalayim? It really doesn't matter. Either one could have been devastating for their generation. If Nechreva Yerushalayim, if Yerushalayim the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, and that area in the city, Har Habayis, was plowed, it meant, as the Romans intended, that never again would the Beis HaMikdash be rebuilt. If Betar was plowed, it meant that never again will there be Jewish resistance to be able to build fortresses so as to be able to hold out and knock the Roman armies for a loop, the way Bar Kokhba and his boys did. And what the Roman legions were showing is that never again will there be a Betar. So I don't know, it really doesn't matter, but the symbol is the important part. And probably they chose Tisha B'Av, knowing full well that this, in the psyche of the Jew, is a day marked for tzaras. And I'll give you more tzaras. I always wonder if Yom Kippur, when the Yom Kippur War started, had more meaning than just a strategic meaning, when the Arab legions knew that most of the armies would be around davening, well, if there was something more than just a strategic military kind of a move, I don't know. But surely we could say that in ancient times, at least, everyone knew that when Tisha B'Av came, the Jew was afraid. And the best time to get someone when he's down, when he's afraid.
You're saying there's something more in the case of the 73 war, there's something more as far as the Arab government?
Yes, in their mind. More than just simple military strategy. What do you mean? What day? Instead of Yom Kippur, they went to Tisha B'Av. Yeah, no. So I hear what you're saying. They should have done Tisha B'Av instead. I don't know. I really don't know. It's just a vagrant thought.
Most Jews don't observe Tisha B'Av. They don't observe Tisha B'Av. They don't
observe.
All right.
Tisha B'Av, they're not necessarily in Shul.
Have to ask Nasser,
please. I don't know.
Is there any halachic symbolism to the idea of attacking on the
kid? Halachic symbolism itself?
Is what? It's
the day of judgment.
What, to be attacked on the Kippur? That was our net. That was a net. A military net that attacked on the Kippur and not on Sukkot.
Why?
Because on Sukkot the roads were crowded with travelers, with vacationers. While in Kippur, thank God, the roads were empty, the army could move. And with all that, there are hundreds of casualties in traffic.
Traffic
casualties, I don't want to say.
Sure, getting to the front.
Could you imagine if that would have been in Sukkot? Everyone is traveling in.
Everyone's on vacation.
Everyone's on vacation. They start going back and forth with the cars.
It's incredible insight. I mean, you have to know the land and the life to be able to, you know.